Welcome to the On Course podcast presented by the New England Golf Journal. I am Sean Melia, your host, alongside my revered co-host, Jim McCabe. Jim, how you doing?
Fantastic. No snow on the ground. Winter's over.
Typical golfers.
Yeah.
You just got to reference the weather.
It's all about.
Whether it's getting good or when it's terrible, it always has to do with the weather.
Yes, it does. And you can see grass and you can see ground.
Yeah.
I put my snowblower away officially. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully there's no April Fool's storm.
No, I'll put it away.
I played nine holes already this year.
Yeah.
I'm going to play nine holes after we're done recording this at President's. It's kind of that the momentum has started. The ball's rolling downhill. It's great.
Chomping at the bit.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you a quick question, and I told you before we hit record here that your answer might be no, and that's okay. Fine. We can vamp and I can give you some thoughts. Have you watched Full Swing season 2 on Netflix?
No.
No. Why not?
Frankly, I'm
no interest.
I think because I lived the PGA Tour for 20 years and
yeah.
Watch it all. And I think it's all contrived. I think it's scripted. And they can say it at poignant moments. It's television.
Yep.
There's a script. They're trying to sell something.
Yeah.
They can't sell generic.
No.
And I don't know. No, have not seen it. Probably won't see it. There's too much good stuff.
To watch otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. So I have watched it. And the one thing I think that I took away from it that has to do with maybe New England golf is, man, Keegan Bradley was just this like sympathetic figure who I know he's not terribly well liked just because of the way he plays golf, and maybe it's the New Englander edge that he has a little bit. I know there's people out there who just, he kind of rubs people the wrong way. He was so good just watching him deal with Zach Johnson calling him and telling him, like, you're not on the Ryder Cup. You're not on the Ryder Cup team. And watching Zach Johnson have dinner with Ricky Fowler and Spieth and JT during the Open Championship, and they're all canoodling with each other. And then you got Keegan Bradley on the outside of that entire thing, and he ends up not getting picked.
Right.
And it's the whole suitcase still hasn't been unpacked from whatever that was, 2012. He's lost two Ryder Cups on the two. He was on that 10 and the 12 team.
12, yeah.
Or 12 and 14.
12 and 14.
12 and 14, right. So he was on the Medina team that blew it and then and then went to Europe and lost in 14 at Glen Eagles. And I think this is the only thing I want to throw out to you before we get to our guest. Keegan Bradley should be a Ryder Cup captain at some point. What do you think about that?
In the old days, if you were a PGA champion, you were going to be a captain.
Yep.
The landscape has changed. The complexion has changed. Larry Nelson did it. Not only did he win a PGA, he won U.S. Open.
Yep.
Never made it.
Yep.
It has become I think part of the reason maybe why Keegan, and I have read that he comes off, his story comes off well in the Full Swing.
Yep.
I think because I sense, especially now as the whole complexion of the PGA Tour is changing, I think people are frankly a little bit sick of the same guys all the time. And once you get in the club, you're in the club.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm not disparaging Jordan Spieth, but my question is, why is Jordan Spieth in that club?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we all know why, because once you're in, you know you're in. Justin Thomas is in because he's Tiger's
guy,
little brother.
Yep. Yep.
Keegan's not.
Nope.
People know that. It's been hopped on, and people know it.
Yeah.
Keegan knows it.
Yep.
And I think maybe that's why that part resonates. Do I think he will be a Ryder Cup captain someday? If everything continues the way it's going, I would say it's 50-50.
Yeah.
He's still at his age, and you hate to say that, but, you know, I mean, once you get over 32 on the PGA Tour, people go, oh, my goodness, they're getting older.
Yeah. I mean, Spieth is 30, and he's
Yeah,
been around forever.
Their 30s and now the Abergs and all the 20 to 22-year-olds are coming right out of college. They're giving Gordon Sargent a card just for being Gordon Sargent.
Well, that's not true. He's good. Well, he's earned it. He's played in a bunch of stuff. That's not fair to Gordon.
Well, no, I'm saying they invented this.
Yes,
There was no...
Well, they needed something to
Brad Elder did everything Gordon Sargent did in college.
Right.
And that was a different era. They didn't give you... Now they're afraid of losing these young kids.
Yeah.
But to the point, do I think he's going to be a Ryder Cup captain? I'm 50-50 on it. Would I pick him in a heartbeat?
Yeah. Yeah,
I totally admire the kid. If people don't like backing off and the way he lines up a putt, I say, give me a break.
Aim point.
Why is Jordan Spieth antics sexy and cool?
Yeah.
But Keegan's aren't.
Yeah. That's just, it's a good comparison.
I don't know what's wrong with the way, Keegan plays beautifully, works hard at the game.
Yeah.
He is committed to who he is and how he plays. He cherishes his family heritage. And, yes, I would pick him in a heartbeat. Yeah. Will they? I'm not sure.
I mean,
look at Steve Stricker's been a Ryder Cup captain. Davis Love's been captain for 45 different teams. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, Bradley, the other thing you were just talking about is just his work ethic. The fact that he was at the peak of his powers and playing really good golf in the early 2010s mm-hmm. with a belly putter when he had figured it out because he's a great ball striker. And then USGA just rips that away from him. And he's got to rebuild. And he's just came through. But his 36, 37?
37, 38? I think.
There's not a lot of other American golfers that are his age that are major champions and still kind of relevant. Like Jason Duffner. Those are the guys. I think he's going to get to the point where he's 45 or 50, and maybe he makes one more Ryder Cup team. I don't think he's going to win another major, but there's also just not a lot of people to choose from in his age range.
No, I mean,
to be the Ryder Cup captain.
It used to be a real
Webb
fun.
Simpson?
No, it used to be a really fun thing we would do as golf writers sitting out after the round over. Stories are filed and run the list of all the captains. This guy.
Yeah.
Let's not forget you have lost a lock. The lock of locks.
Phil Mickelson. Yeah, for sure.
Tiger is a lock when he wants it.
Right.
Now, will he take it at Bethpage? Who knows?
Yeah, it's weird that they don't have a captain yet. Right?
No, I think it's
a different story. Keegan?
My guess is that Tiger is...
He's got so many things going on. It would be insane.
He's the policy board and there's this and that. Am I playing? Am I not playing?
I know.
Oh, I mean, Charlie's my son. I'm trying to, I don't know. But the pathway for Ryder Cup captaincy right now in the U.S. isn't what it was 10, 12 years ago.
Yep.
We're not even going to get into Europe. But you expected Zach Johnson get a job. He did.
Yep.
Jim Furyk, he did.
Yep.
Steve Stricker, yes. All of a sudden...
We've run through a lot of those names.
We've run through players. Yep. Spieth, Justin Thomas, yes.
Yeah, but they're too young.
Too young.
Yeah, they're not there yet.
Too young. And the PGA... Listen, everything is about selling and marketing. Is it sexy to say, we're going to bring back Stuart Sink? Well, wonderful guy, great player.
Yeah, he's been involved.
Major champion.
Yep.
Probably he played well in some Ryder Cups.
Yep.
Bad Ryder Cup teams, but he played particularly well.
Yep.
Does he get it? I don't know. I mean, everything is marketing. It's sexy to say Tiger Woods is your captain. It would have been a slam dunk that Phil Mickelson was your captain at 25.
At Bethpage. It would have been perfect.
So to circle back to Keegan, I would love to see him be a captain.
I think he's in the running. I hope he will be a guy that is considered. We have a guest on today who is, you could call a Keegan Bradley contemporary. In Evan Harmeling, who is 35, and he just played his first PGA Tour event, has been grinding, speaking of like working hard and just chasing a dream. So he is this week's guest. Looking forward to chatting with him about his path and his journey and his PGA Tour debut, grabbing a top 10 at Puerto Rico a couple weeks ago, and he's getting ready for the Valspar, because top 10s get you through to the next week.
Good
and
for him.
And so we're going to talk to him and hear about his journey in golf as a Massachusetts kid who is chasing a dream and still chasing it, which is awesome. So let's bring him in.
Awesome.
Okay, I want to welcome in Evan Harmeling, who is currently at TPC Sawgrass on the 18th green, hanging out, just enjoying life in the sunshine. Evan, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On site, this is great.
Boots on the ground here. I'm actually by the TPC.
Yeah, I mean, if there's an episode to watch on YouTube, this is the one. So
just Justin Rose sprayed into the trees, right?
Uh-oh.
Well, we wanted to have you on. You've had a hell of a last week and a half, and thought we could just start there and then maybe work our way backwards and talk about your journey. But first PGA Tour event last week, Puerto Rico, finish in the top 10, which means you're playing next week, I believe, at Valspar, or in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, next week.
Can you just kind of talk us through Monday qualifying and then getting into a PGA Tour event and then playing as well as you did and now kind of getting some momentum going?
Yeah, just a roar on 17, as you said it. Yeah, so it was crazy, man. I've been playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, and I just decided I didn't want to go to Chile and Argentina. I wanted to hang with my family. I got a wife and two young girls, and I was just kind of gone for a few weeks earlier in the year, kind of in a row, and it's getting increasingly difficult to leave my almost 3.5-year-old and 9-month-old. They want me around. And so anyway, I don't want to go down there. It's just too far. I was like, let's stay here. We can all stay together. We'll go down and stay with my parents and play a couple of Monday qualifiers. And played the first one for the Cognizant, the old Honda, and played really well, but missed. And then thought, like, I was actually like, let's just go home. I was like, let's get out of here. I really want to just sit here and twiddle my thumbs for the next week. And so, but then my wife was like, no, I made plans on Saturday with these friends. I was like, we got to stay until Saturday. And I was like, well, if we're staying until Saturday, we're going to stay till Monday and play the Monday. Yeah. And so, yeah, I played the Monday, and I carried my bag. My caddy wasn't there, but so got a carry bag from my, like, actually dug out the old Princeton bag from the closet. My mom had it still, and carried that around. And I was just cruising, kind of like 8-under through 16, just absolute cruise control, just playing awesome golf, no stress really. And then, made triple on 17. It was just such an awful triple. I mean, it's like a 400-yard par four. It's really just a 4-iron, 8-iron kind of thing. Decided to hit 7-wood off the tee, got myself into a little trouble, and then tried to hit a hero shot, like, because I just got it in my head that everyone was 8-under, and tried to hit it was actually like a slide. You kind of needed to slice it around these trees, and double crossed it and just smother hooked it out of bounds. It wasn't even a hook. It was just a hot pull out of bounds. And then it was just kind of scrambling around from there. Made a 7, but then regrouped, made par, and then sweated the whole thing out for a while to finally get into a playoff, 4-for-1 playoff. And I just hit 2 awesome shots, and I hit it right over the stick and spun it back to like 4 feet. In the first playoff hole, and one other guy hit a good shot in there to 8 or 9 feet, but then missed it. And then I made this 4-footer, and boom, went to Puerto Rico and had a good week down there. Yeah. I mean, it was my first tour event, but I felt great. I feel like I belong out there.
Evan, when you're in Puerto Rico, are you thinking going in? Clearly I gotta believe you're thinking of winning this thing, but are you also thinking, okay, play well, finish top 10, especially each round you played solidly?
Yeah, I mean, I top 10 was my goal. I mean, that was like my stated result goal, but I really wanted to stay focused on just little things, on little day-to-day things as much as I could, just to kind of stay grounded and not get ahead of myself and be like, oh, this is a tour event and blah blah blah. I mean, it's easy in golf to just start thinking results and start thinking, I got to make birdie here, or I got to shoot 5 under, or I got to finish top 10, or I got to win, and then the implications. And it's like, so it's really easy to think that way, but that's never been something that's helped me. I mean, I like just sticking to my routines, both on the golf course, routines with my shots and after rounds, before rounds. I mean, those are the kind of things that lead to success for me. So yeah, I mean, I obviously wanted to play well, but in terms of like, oh, I'm like trying to win or trying to finish top 10, it was there, but that didn't really enter my mind too much. Actually, I did a good job until the end when I looked at a scoreboard on 16 on Sunday and I was like, okay, here's where I'm at. But like, this is like, it's time to make a couple birdies. I mean, it's like, this has been great, but I'm not ready. It's like, I'm not looking to lay up here. Like, I'm going for this. I'm going to make 2 birdies and give myself a chance at top 10.
You did finish birdie birdie, correct?
Finished birdie birdie. Yeah.
Nice.
And yeah. And that, I mean, I think that kind of, that helps me hone the focus in like a short period of time when there's only a couple holes left. It's like, here's what I got to do. And yeah, I did it and it was awesome. But until that point, it's difficult. It's 5 hours too long to have that mentality, in my opinion. It's like, I mean, if it's great, gotta make a birdie here, okay, then you can do that 18 times. Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. But if it's like, hey, like, this is it. Like, we got 2 holes here, time to bear down and make it happen here. I'm good in those situations. I've done well at kind of ends of tournaments when it's all kind of on the line. And so, yeah, I'm proud of that. Definitely.
It's a dynamic within golf and maybe other sports too, but golf feels like it is exasperated, where you hear players talk about like the process and just following the process and not be results oriented. But then you get to the 71st hole of a tournament and you're like, well, now I have to flip that switch and focus on actually trying to do 2 very specific things. How do you balance those 2 mindsets while you're playing? Are you typically really just focused on the process? What things, when you have to flip the switch, do you still remain process focused on? Or what's your kind of thinking as you're, I got to make 2 birdies because I'd love to be in the top 10 and keep this going?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it still is all about the process, but like in real terms, what it changed was like on 17, it had a left pin, left to right wind, and I hit a cut. So I'm riding the wind. And one of like the process oriented things for me is like, I'm not gonna get too fancy with trying to like draw shots into the wind, or it's something that I've learned over the years. It's like, in that situation earlier in the week, I'm hitting wedge right at the stick and it's going to cut a little bit because of my shot and the wind's going to take it and probably going to be like 20 to 30 feet right. It's going to spin right. I mean, that's generally how it goes. But like in that situation, it's like, you can't just be aiming at the stick there. You got to aim left of it and make it happen. I mean, I hit a really good shot. I think I had 140. It was downwind, so I hit 55 degree, hit my sand wedge and hit it left. And the wind wasn't moving it. And I'm just like screaming for the wind to help me. But it stayed there. It landed just on the fringe, kicks a little right to like 7 feet and made that. But yeah, that's how it would change in real terms. Just like, I got to get really aggressive with this shot. I mean, left was no good. If I missed it left, if it landed like a yard left of where I landed it, I have a really tough up and down. So I wouldn't be doing that. I wouldn't be taking that line ordinarily, but it's very small. It's a subtle change. Like, it's not like I'm walking up like birdie, 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 birdie. No, it's like I'm still sticking to the process. I'm still doing my breathing stuff. I'm still doing everything. It's just like, hey, we gotta get aggressive,
Yeah.
and there's no option here. Like, we're making birdie.
Yeah, the focus tightens a little bit, right? The
Yeah.
focus just gets a little tighter.
To
Definitely.
Evan, that for the people up who know you, and there's a lot of people in the, especially in the north, up north of Boston, who know you, and still, all I do is once in a while text someone about, have you been following Evan? They're like, following him. Yes, the golf is a great ride, and but the ride you've been on, and we can go back, and the famous, pretty iconic hole in one you had in Latin America, your State Open win here. It's more than 10 years ago now, right?
Yeah, 11.
13, was
Yeah.
it 13?
2013, yep.
Yeah, right after the bombing. And just recently, I texted you, and it was cool to watch you get to the final stage of the DP World Tour Q School. A lot of guys have had a pretty good ride in golf. You have had an especially flavorful ride in golf. Just talk about the adventure you've been on.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun. I've been lucky, really lucky to be playing this game for my job. I mean, I've got hurt a couple times and gotten real jobs for stints, but I mean, this has been my job for the last 12 years pretty much, and it's been a lot of fun. I mean, Canada, Latin America, last year going over to, I mean, I after I did that, I was like, wow, why haven't I gone over here and played? Because
You're in
actually,
Spain.
my
You
game.
spent a lot of the
Yeah, I went to
it's in
Belgium for
Spain, right?
first stage, and then Spain for second and third. And I mean, from a golf standpoint, I think my game is suited for courses like that. Definitely better than it is for like the Korn Ferry Tour, for instance. But it's been fun. And I mean, I met my wife in Brazil. We got two girls now, and it's definitely been flavorful. I mean, it's been all over the place, and I really think that I've gotten better, maybe with the exception of a year or two recently, 21, 22 maybe, but I've gotten better incrementally over the years. And I mean, I've always had a lot of game, but there were a lot of things that I needed to get to like a real professional level, like my putting. My routines, things off the course to like set myself up to get my mind in a good place to stay focused out there. So yeah, it's been a fun ride.
I think I mentioned, I probably the details, the hole-in-one story. I just always remember it was like, I remember getting calls from friends who knew you, and they said, "You see what Evan just did?" And just bring us back to that. You make the hole-in-one
Yeah.
playing. Were you in Argentina Open?
Argentina Open. Yeah, the whole story is, well, I had this caddy, Martin, in Argentina, and the guy was kind of nuts. But so he'd make me promise him to give him the car if I made a hole in one, because they always had a car, but they're giving away a car. I mean, it's like Ford is the sponsor. They always put up a car there, and you make an ace, you get a car. And Martin was like, you got to give me the car. And he'd always promise me, make me promise. Then I got a different caddy that year in 2018, and Beto. And on Wednesday, I was like thinking about Martin, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna tell Beto that I'm gonna give him the car. And I was like, hey, Beto, like, I'm gonna make an ace here this week, and I'm gonna give you this car. And then sure enough, I made it on Friday, and gave him the car. I mean, he took the cash payout. They have that. I mean, he told me later, like, he was like that, and I went to his house, like the neighborhood he lived in. He's like, you can't bring a car back to this neighborhood, let alone like a brand new car. And so he took the cash, and it was awesome. I mean, it was a great week for me. It was kind of like a breakthrough week for me at the time, but then also made that ace, and yeah, and I was proud that I want to, like, part of my journey here is to like make this for some higher purpose and for some good. I mean, a lot of the times I see other people doing awesome things, like classmates of mine, and it's like, and then I think about what I'm doing, and I'm like, well, I'm playing golf, and it's like, okay, well, that's great. Like, what does that mean? It's like, well, it's entertainment. Like, we're entertaining people is the extent of our value to society, and I guess that's something. but I like doing things that help other people. That, I mean, that's what makes me feel good. And I mean, granted, it was just me kind of following through on what I told the guy I would do on Wednesday, but I was proud that I like thought of him, and I'm like, you know what, Beto, like, I'm gonna give you this car, and I'm gonna make this ace. And so there was definitely some, and I actually felt that way when I made the ace. I was like, I felt like I made the ace because I told him that. And even like the swing that I made and the way it felt, it was, I hit it pure, but I fully expected that ball to be pulled like 10 yards the way it felt off the face. And then I look up and the thing just right at the stick, and then like one hops in. I'm like, wow, that just seems a little bit crazy. Like, feels like it just went in because I told him I'd give him the car. So that was cool.
And looking 5 years before that, just carrying on with your thoughts about helping other people, you win the Mass Open and you donate your winnings from that event, which was in close proximity to the Boston Marathon bombing. So I think you donated to Boston Strong or to a foundation that was kind of connected to
to the One Fund. Yeah. Actually, it was to Driscoll's fund, James Driscoll's fund, that was giving the money to the One Fund, because he was the first guy that kind of made me think about doing this, because he was doing some stuff when he was on tour at the time to raise money. And I just thought that was a cool thing. And I gave it to the One Fund. And again, like, I'm very lucky to be able to give that money away, and I could still go and like play in the next tournaments and still like pay my rent. But I like making my golf career for some higher purpose, for good. And I'm the first to say I haven't done like a ton, really. I mean, I gave some money away, and then gave my caddy a car when I told him I'd give it to him. But more recently, I've thought about that a lot. I'm like, you know what, like, those are great, but it's like, that's like, it's, what have you done for me lately? Like, keep doing this. Keep putting your money where your mouth is.
Where are you right now? You've been saying you've been getting better. You know, I think you said 21, 22, but not just Puerto Rico, but do you feel like, okay, I'm back to the way I want to play here in 24?
Definitely. I mean, I understand how I can play good golf now. And really, that means hitting cuts, especially into greens, and not trying to hit the ball far, hitting cuts and working on my putting a lot. I mean, when I hit cuts, and I think some of it has to do with like with technology nowadays, like especially with driver, like I swing it pretty, I hit it hard, and turning it over nowadays with not a lot of spin is really inconsistent and is going to get you into trouble. It's one thing if you swing at 110, sure, turn it over and try to maximize. You're swinging at 120 plus, like, and you're hitting these knuckleball draws, it's like, good luck. It's just a matter of time before that gets you into trouble. And that's, I mean, everyone that is high swing speed hits cuts. It's like Rory, I think, I mean, I don't really know, but Rory's like the only guy that turns it over sometimes. I know Max Homa last year, I saw him in an interview, and he's like, my caddy and coach let me turn over one ball a week in 72 holes. It's like, yeah, when they're talking about it, let me turn it over once. And he's like, I just have to stay disciplined hitting cuts. And it's that kind of deal. It's like, if I don't get myself into trouble off the tee, even if I give up 20 yards, and even if I'm in like the right rough, like you see these kind of like little bunty quail cuts, and it's like, well, that thing just went 270, and I'm like just off the fairway in the right rough, and I'm now I have 8 iron as opposed to a wedge. It's like, who cares, you know? And we, especially when you think about 72 holes, and that's like the opposite of all these stats guys. They're like, they like see my swing speed, and they're like, you should get it up even higher, and you should just be hitting it as hard as you can. And I've worked with some of those guys for times, but it's just not, it doesn't translate for me over a 72 hole period. It's like, I just got to keep myself out of trouble. I'm a good putter now, and just do things in the most consistent way possible, which is hitting cuts, not trying to hit the ball hard.
I saw a piece on McIlroy last night where he is not even using long tees anymore. He gives Harry Diamond one long tee that Harry keeps in his pocket, and he tells Harry, you can give this to me once around. Otherwise, I'm using smaller tees. And he's been driving the ball better than he's probably ever has in his life. And I think some of it has been attributed to him just using a normal size tee versus those super long ones, which I thought was an interesting dynamic and choice.
Yeah, no, that isn't. I mean, it really is true. I mean, it's, and some of it is what, like, it's all hype about like distance, and but it is true. It's like, ball's going a long way. Everyone hits it far, and it's like these courses, even out here, Stadium Course at Sawgrass, it's like just kind of overpower courses, and then people inevitably realize, like, hey, like, you don't need to shoot 9 under every round. Like, what you need to do is just consistently, like, shoot good scores, and that translates well, avoiding mistakes, and I mean, granted, it's coming from a place where it's like, hey, can hit the ball a long way and can afford to just like lay back a little bit. But that's what I for sure have learned over the last 4 or 5 years. It's just a question of like basically my ego. Like, I just want to hit the ball far, and it's hard for me to be disciplined. It has been hard for me to be disciplined. And for like people, like when I work with these stats guys, it's like all I need for them to tell me is like, you should just be smashing it. And I'm like, perfect. And then 5 months, I have like justification for just hitting it as hard as I can, but it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So the more I stay disciplined, that the results have been crystal clear. So yeah.
Good tips for the youngsters out there.
Well, it took you a while to play your first PGA Tour event. It hasn't taken you anything now. Now you get up for Valspar. How excited are you to just keep this going?
I'm excited. I mean, I do feel like I belong out there. I mean, I've also played with these guys. I haven't played with Rory, JT, and Rom, and all these guys. But I've played, the vast majority of the people on tour have come through the Korn Ferry Tour over the last 7, 8 years when I've been out there. And so it's not like, it doesn't feel intimidating. It doesn't feel new. And I've always been the opposite in terms of that. Like, I really enjoy, like, I enjoy playing with the best players and having people watch me. And my dad always said that, like, if we could just get a crowd around you all the time, like, you'd be out on tour in a heartbeat. But I like the moment. I enjoy feeling pressure, and it's just fun. I mean, that's why I like playing golf. It's like, wow, this is nerve wracking right now. Like, it's just really cool that just happens just because of the situation, just because, like, out on the golf course, you're playing golf, but you're just like nervous, and that's just fun to, it's a fun challenge. Like, can I step up and like execute this shot? Or can I make birdie when I'm nervous like this? And it feels good when you do it.
That's awesome. A lot of people are going to be watching next week, I can promise you.
Thanks, man.
I heard from a mutual friend of ours, Paul Burke. He I asked him for something I should bring up. He asked me, or at least he mentioned that you kind of said you had some other jobs outside of golf. The pandemic, obviously you're kind of in your early 30s at that point, which was probably a tough time to figure out, like, do I want to go back out? When is this all going to be over that I can go back and play? And he said you worked at a hotel in Vermont. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what were you doing up there?
Well, it was a couple of years ago, and I got hurt. I had my knee scoped, and so I was going to take the rest of the year off. But yeah, I was the general manager of this motel in Stowe, Vermont. It was awesome. I mean, I I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was cool. It was 60 rooms, and there's a pizza restaurant there, and then like kind of an events business that I was trying to like get up and running. But it was, I mean, there were different things going on every day, and just calling the maintenance guy because like there's a leak in his bathtub, and then trying to figure out how I can fix it later, when because it actually happens all the time. And yeah, I mean, it was like there was never a dull moment. And I like problem solving. I like different challenges like that. But I also have kind of found out in the real world outside of golf that it's different, where you just, I mean, every job obviously is different, but the ones that I've been in contact with, like you show up and you work hard with a smile on your face, like you're gonna do pretty well. And let alone if you're any good or have a brain in your head. Like a lot, like effort goes a long way in most jobs. I mean, it's whereas golf, it's like golf is cutthroat as anything. Like if anything, like effort, you can just start banging your head against the wall and get nothing for it in golf, in professional golf. Because I mean, number one, there's maybe 200, 300 guys that are making money doing it in the world. And it's just like you got to see the big picture in golf. Like you can just try, try, try. But if you're not calm mentally, and if you don't like have it figured out, your formula, then it's not gonna do you any good.
Yeah, those bathtub leaks are a little different in the golf game, right?
Yeah.
Manifest themselves very differently. They can't just play the screen all the time. Well, want to wish you a lot of luck next week at Valspar. We will be following along, and also just in your journey this summer and beyond. So, thanks for joining us. Enjoy the players. Rory's crushing it right now. Maybe go find him and watch him hit some drives. And good luck next week.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Evan.
Best. All the best.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good.
You too.
All right, it is time for Golf Course Confidential, where we pick a golf course around New England that we think you should play. This week, I'm going to do something a little bit different. We're going to talk about a bucket list golf course. So we're in March. It is just kind of getting that time when everyone wants to go play. Maybe they're making some plans, and I thought we could let's we've talked about a lot of places that might be 18 holes for a good value, or maybe just a little bit on the pricier side. We're blowing it out this week, and we're going to go to and talk about a golf course that I think we've never talked about on the podcast except for with Mark Plummer. Cape
Okay.
Arundel.
Well, I'm stunned that you just said this, because you usually throw something at me. I actually took a pre-Christmas trip up there, up to that part of Maine,
Okay.
and
I
I'll
didn't know
drive.
that.
Yes, my wife and her sister and husband, and we do pre-Christmas kind of, you
Yeah,
know, go up to
the festive
up to
things.
Freeport, is it? L.L.
Yep.
Bean and all
Yeah,
that stuff.
yeah.
Okay. And then we're down at Kennebunkport, and we're driving around, and we kind of came in the back way, and all of a sudden I looked over and I told my brother-in-law, who's a golf nut, I think this is a Rundle. And he's like, "What's a Rundle?" And I said, "It's a golf course you have to play."
Yes.
I said, "I've been there and I've never played it. I've actually been up in that part of Maine, and I went over and saw it, and it's cool, and we all know President Bush's 41 and 43 were both
Yep.
members there, and we know some legendary stories of the Freddie Couples and Phil Mickelson and Brad Faxon playing up there.
Yep.
At the end of the day, all the window dressing stories aside, it is a really good golf course.
Yeah.
It is fun.
Yeah. It's so you have never played it.
I have
You've
not.
walked it or
I
kind of
know
just
it's
been
fun because
around.
I've seen it. It's fun golf course just to look at. It's going to be fun to play.
Yeah, so I played it, man, maybe 20 years ago now, 15 years ago. and it was a blast. It is private, but the public can get, there's kind of select tee times if you're,
They were way.
yeah, if you're on top of it. Like if you go to the website, there's a button to press that is make a tee time. So you can go play it. I think it's typically Mondays is the day that it's open to the public for a few tee times. So it is not a place you can, like so many places now, where you can just go and book a tee time a week in advance. I think you probably have to do it on shorter notice. It is a Walter Travis. It is short
Yes, it is.
by today's standards, and the green complexes are kind of revered as some of the best in the country as far as the design and the challenge, and they kind of get them humming, and they're really fast. I have a quote from Walter Travis, who designed it. He said, quote, "While the course plays on the short side, it will strongly appeal to every class of golfer, from the crack to the dub." I don't know what those words mean. "It looks easy, as my courses do, but the man who equals par will have played some golf," which I like that. I like that
Yeah.
last little bit. The man who equals par will have played some golf. It's another place that you can play in the shoulder seasons for a little cheaper. It looks like on their website right now, from May 12th to May 25th, so a very short window, and from October 10th to their close, whenever the weather gets cold enough, you can play it for $125 Monday to Thursday and
Good deal.
150 on the weekend. So that's kind of coming up soon when they open. It's Maine, so their shoulder season is farther into the season than down here. And then mid-season, if you're up in that area, or you just want to drive and you can get a tee time, it's 175 from Monday to Thursday, and then Friday to Sunday it's 225. And then they've got a 250 rate for, I think it's Memorial Day weekend and 4th of July, if you want to try to get out then, which I wouldn't recommend that for anybody. But you can get out, and you can go play a private golf course that is, it is revered. Fried Egg had a really good video on YouTube that you can go watch, with some great drone footage and just showing off these greens and the design of the place. It's awesome.
If you know Ogunquit, Kennebunkport area, then you know what character, I mean, the character and the charm of those towns. If you don't, you should go.
You should go learn about it.
Well, yeah, and but find Arundel, look into it. If you think you might want to give it a shot, there are ways on it. Figure it out. Be creative. And if you really get a chance to play, you'll know why.
The door is cracked, which I think says, there's so many people who I hear from who are like, "How did you get on to this golf course or that golf course?" And usually it's like, I just have a friend who's a member, or I signed up for an event or a qualifier, and like that's how I ended up playing it. You don't have the answer for this one is I got a tee time. And there are not a lot of places like that in this country that you can very easily,
No.
at a private place where two presidents were members, and are members, and that has a attracts a bunch of great players
I
for
think
games.
I
It's
think
astounding.
no, I think the story facts and always told me it was the most nervous he was ever over on a putt. Was 18 at Cape Arundel, and he's playing with President Bush, 41, I believe, and he's playing beautifully. And halfway down 18, President Bush, who apparently played quicker than quick, and flies ahead in his golf cart, and he gets down. It's a small clubhouse, but it's charming. And the way he facts and told the story, the president insisted everybody come out to the deck, all the employees. Next thing, Brad Facton looks up, and there's probably 50 people out. And the president announces that this 12-footer is to set the course record.
Amazing.
And Brad missed it.
One of
So
the generational putters.
and I think he shares the course record with Fred Couples. I
Amazing.
think it's 60, 61. I think Facts ended up putt for 60. But it's going to remind you of, this is what golf was at the turn of the century. It was considered short, but that's what golf courses were in the turn of the century. And it's charming.
So go check out Cape Arundel if you're looking for a little golf adventure, or if you happen to have a family vacation up in Maine, and just look at a map. It's not terribly far from Portland. It's kind of in that area,
yeah,
in Kennebunk. So Cape Arundel, I'm going to try to go play it. Like I said, I haven't played it in a long time, but it's another spot I would like to go play and enjoy and splurge a little bit. So that's it for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the Encores podcast. Please rate, review, subscribe. If you are listening to this, you can watch it on YouTube. If you are watching this on YouTube, please subscribe. Thanks to Dave Yaz for producing the podcast. The Encores podcast is a Siemens Media production.